Crisis in Ukraine is far from over, indicative of decisions made by the players involved. Take the European Union, which announced not only sanctions against Russia, suspending visa and economic talks, while threatening targeted sanctions, as well as a broad range of economic measures. It also announced that it was ready to sign the association accord with Ukraine before the elections. What will Russia's reactions be? Well, so far, Russia increasing its troops in Crimea, totaling around 30,000. But what if a major Russian red line was crossed, like Ukraine joining NATO? Will Russia deploy forces further into Ukraine? Stay tuned for those answers and questions in this edition of The Debate.
In recent days, Russia and the West have been trading barbs as the U.S. and EU have threatened Moscow with economic sanctions over its policies. Russia has brushed off the threats as the two sides remain divided over how to resolve the crisis in Ukraine. Moscow has called these sanctions, which include asset freezes, visa and travel bans, as extremely unconstructive. It's warned that it will respond accordingly if any of the sanctions are imposed.
Unless there's a willingness to step back and look at the whole picture, I see this going in a very dangerous direction, possibly even leading to a war confrontation between NATO and Russia, which would be horrific.
Several countries, including China and India, have been quick to slam the West for such moves. Beijing has called for a political settlement to end the crisis. New Delhi has also backed Russia's policy in Ukraine, saying Moscow has legitimate interests in Crimea, which should be taken into account.
The European Union would very much like to, number one, avoid being drawn into major economic sanctions against Russia, because quite frankly, the Russians have a lot of economic leverage. Frankly, the European banking and financial system is on very weak ground.
Ukraine's interim prime minister has condemned those backing a split and called the outcome in referendum unconstitutional, a position shared by the U.S. and the EU. Despite the call, Crimea has pushed forward the vote to March 16. Over the past week, the local government in the key Crimean port city of Sevastopol has voted in favor of joining Russia. Lawmakers there have expressed support for the referendum and agreed to form a commission to hold a separate vote. Meanwhile, pro-Russia demonstrators have once again taken to the streets of Moscow and Donetsk, an industrial city in eastern Ukraine, in a show of support for Crimea's secession bid. Now, with less than 10 days to the vote, many analysts believe that Crimeans will eventually vote in favor of rejoining Russia. But it still remains to be seen how Western countries will react to the popular vote.
You're watching The Debate. Let me introduce our guest. Senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, Richard Weiss, joins us from Washington. Managing editor and columnist from Veterans Today, Jim Dean, joins us from Atlanta. Gentlemen, welcome. Lots of developments, obviously, to keep up to the minute with, practically. And I'm going to start with you, Jim Dean. I'd like to get your reaction about the EU taking a couple steps. They've announced to join these U.S. sanctions against Russia, suspending visa and economic talks, and also threatened targeted sanctions, as well as a broad range of economic measures. And they've also announced their willingness to sign an association accord with Ukraine before early elections at the end of May. What's your reaction to that?
Well, this is pretty much what we expected, because we're in what we would call a post-coup situation. The West has been basically attacking the Soviet former states on their border, trying to put puppet governments in. And of course, they've been burying under in debt, and they're forcing them to come to the West to be able to get bailed out now. So the sanctions are very small. As you mentioned in the roll-in, Russia buys a lot more from the EU than the EU does. So I don't think we're gonna see any major sanctions. A lot of that is just talk for the public. And also, this is all trying to move the story past the situation that we have an illegitimate coup here that was funded and backed by foreign countries. And the Russians and Putin have tremendous grounds to say that we don't think that the government has any legal right to claim any legal position on anything, because they're an illegal government. And at Veterans Today, all our intelligence sources basically say there are a lot of people that deserve to be arrested for murder, terrorism, and the crimes that were committed in trying and putting this puppet government in place.
Give us some examples of those crimes.
Well, we know the right sector, just the other day, the acting prime minister has converted them from street thugs to official military units. And this was strongly opposed by the generals in their defense ministry, whom were summarily fired. So that showed us that the right sector, the deal they had with the opposition is we will roll you into official military units once we take charge. You'll be on the payroll, and then you'll have immunity for some of the nasty things that we're going to be having you do to the opposition. And all of our sources tell us that we're fairly certain that the killings that were done, that we know from the Ashton tape, were done by one group shooting both parties. That was a classic large country intelligence psyops provocation. So it was a terrorist attack, a political terrorist attack, and you see no calls from the West to really investigate or even want to know who was really behind it, because the West is really who was behind it.
Richard Weitz, do you agree?
I'm not sure what actually happened in Kiev and so on. The evidence is mixed. The larger questions, though, I think we want to address are those related to Russian military intervention in Crimea, the EU and NATO response, where do we go from where we are now? And in that context, you would probably have investigations to determine who did what in terms of committing acts of violating people's human rights, acts of terrorism, foreign involvement, and so on. But it's not something we're going to be able to solve at present, because it's just too recent and the evidence is too mixed and confused.
Well, let's look, Jim Dean, at some of the most recent developments, and I'm talking within the past hour that this came through. And let's see, a phone call that Kerry had with Lavrov, in which it warned the United States, Lavrov, against hasty and reckless steps that could harm Russian-American relations. And just 24 hours earlier, I picked out this one from the U.S. State Department. Being what the Russian Foreign Ministry said about the U.S. State Department. Their factological calculations on Ukraine's situation are cynical, low-grade propaganda. I'm guessing that it's not going to return to the status quo, this relationship between Russia and the U.S.
Well, I think that's very possible, and I think that may be the goal of the West. We see a classic trying to divert public attention now from the very precarious financial situation the European countries are in. They need public attention focused on something else. And frankly, we look at that, this is a just cheap propaganda shot at trying to raise the specter of the big bad Russian bear who's a threat. But the Russians want to keep doing business. The Ukraine's a very big trade partner. The EU's a very big trade partner. And they're sick and tired of all the threats on sanctions. But bigger than that, a lot of the defense industry is in eastern Ukraine. And if anybody thinks that the Soviets are going to allow a basically shadow government, Western terrorist puppet government installed in Ukraine, think that they're going to rule over the whole country and have control over all of those industries and all of those Russian-speaking people, they're smoking dope. That is never going to happen. So Putin's going to sit back, and as the West escalates, he's going to respond. But he's not escalating on his own, because he's creating a clear path here that the West has been the aggressor in this whole situation. And we agree, we're the independent intelligence community, and we agree 100% that's who the aggressor has been.
Well, do you agree with Richard Weitz, that the West is the aggressor? I'm looking over here at these military moves by the U.S., for example, sending a dozen F-16 fighter jets, 300 U.S. troops to Poland, planning to station six F-15 fighter jets in neighboring Lithuania. Looking at NATO, let's see, what have they done? They've actually called this an invasion exercise in northern Norway, and the title of this is called The Cold Response. And I think you know why they probably named it that. This involving 16,000 soldiers from 16 countries in the north of Norway. And so far, what we've seen is a base there in Crimea by Russia, of which they have their Navy fleet. They can't be indoors all the time. Obviously, they have movements. And Putin said a few days back they want to protect the Russian nationals who are in Crimea and the Russians who are pro-Russian, if it even means going outside of Crimea. So who's the aggressor? Is Jim Dean correct that it's the West?